everyone, and hello to Natalia. Are you there?
Hi, Joanna. Hi, everyone.
Hey. Welcome to our monthly call. We have so many questions that we've gotten between the last one and this one. So lots of great questions coming up, and we're really looking forward to addressing as many of them as possible. And as always, for those of you who are with us live, want to ask the live questions, let us know by pressing 1. But Natalia, before we jump in, is there anything you wanted to start with?
I just wanted to thank you so much, Joanna, for like keeping everything alive. I want to thank Anna Zaharia, because you know it's been pretty crazy here since the third baby came along, and I couldn't do any of this without the two of you totally backing me up and making everything function and getting back to everyone and keeping things going on Facebook and helping me with these calls and having your fabulous retreats and your groups. I mean, I just wanted to thank you guys so much. If you know, I wanted the world to know what an amazing job these two young women, these gorgeous, brilliant young women, have done to bring this work at a time when, you know, I really could not keep things going on my own with all the family demands. So that's the big thing I wanted to open with.
Just to you're so sweet. Make and thank abundantly you for clear. Giving us. Yeah, for trusting us with all this. It's such it's just been such an amazing journey for me, and I've just loved playing a role in the community. So thank you for opening that up for us.
Yeah, and you've just launched your the big group of the season, and that was Monday, right? No, wait. I'm losing track of time. That was day before yesterday.
Yeah, and I just twice our group calls are on the same day as these community calls. So I just got off the phone with this amazing group of women who just jumped into sharing, and it was so inspiring. And some of them are even on this call now. So they're just so their energy is just felt tremendously. So I'm just grateful to all of them for being so present with the group. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean it's such an important thing to do it as a group too, because it enables people to share knowledge that in ways that they wouldn't get it otherwise, and the inspiration, the motivation, it's so cool. I'm delighted, and it's a fairly large group, I know, this time around as well.
It is. On that note, too, I mean, if anyone wants to jump in on board, I didn't even think of this until you're saying it right now, but if anyone wants to join us late in the game, I still welcome you to sign up. The recordings are available for up to a week after the session. So if you're looking for that experience with an intimate group and just to, you know, bust through some of the blocks, then join us. We'd be happy to have you. You can just email me if you want to sign up.
Good. And we do. We have amazing questions this week. I'm excited. I feel like there's a lot of information that people may not have heard in the same way, the way I want to deliver it today. So as we go through the questions, I think there's going to be really useful new information, even for the veteran group members.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've gotten a chance to look through them. Is there anywhere that you wanted to start in particular, or do you want me to just jump in?
I'm going to just batter on through. Yeah, make sure. Let's get as many as we can. Cast a wide net, and I'll try not to go too long on any one question.
Okay, excellent. All right, so there's been a lot of juice fasting this spring among the community, so I think this is a good one to start with. The question is just someone's finding themselves drawn to the transformative process of a juice fast as a way to majorly reset her system physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and she wanted to approach a process as a 90 days of self-love. So the question is, I'm not free of yeast and candida. What are your thoughts on fruit juices when yeasted and undertaking a juice feast journey? What are some things I should consider before going in? Will I make less progress physically for some reason? Or would the progress I make lead me to a new plateau and I could then focus on a detox for women approach after the juice feast?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to dismantle this. I'm sorry, what was the last part?
Well, there's more to the question, but I think that's the gist of it, so start
there. Okay. I kind of want to dismantle it because I want to, and if you can keep me on track here, there's a few things I want to get to. One is this idea of recalibrating the system. The other is the yeast situation. And another is this concept of being able to kind of, this idea that if you do this, you'll come back to the teachings and your life in a different way. And I want to dispel some of the illusions around that, because, okay, first of all, let's take on this idea of resetting the body. There are so many things that have been thrown off in the body that while a prolonged fast can help get a lot of clarity, there are other ways and other tools that can be implemented to do that. One of the things I want to try and steer people away from is using fasting as a crutch. As it's as much of a crutch as people who need to go shopping or people need to pick up the bottle or shoot themselves up with heroin. It's really important to just be able to be with yourself where you are and enable yourself to gain clarity and happiness and have good relationships and make good choices in that state when you're not fasting. You know, there were times when I knew I had stressful things coming up, and I knew I wanted to be in this place of power with them. So I would fast, knowing that there's a kind of a power that you get. You become almost invincible when you're fasting. And it's okay to use that in the beginning, or if you're consciously using it, I know clients who will fast before, a parent comes into town. I know a lot of clients who do that, fast before their parents come into town, because they cannot handle their parents when they're sober. They can only handle their parents when they're high. Okay, you get the analogy. So,
yeah,
if you're doing that, okay, fine. You know, do it. Just like someone else will go in and say, okay, I need some what is it, retail therapy they call it. But do it consciously. But I want to try to get you guys away from even needing to do it consciously, because you will have a different state of body, of shape of body, of mindset when you're eating than you will when you're fasting. You have a fasting body, a fasting mindset, and you have an eating body, an eating mindset. And sometimes what happens is you start to idealize that that you that's in the fasting body and fasting mindset. And you start to compare yourself when you're in the eating mindset and body set to that person. And you will get very judgmental if you do that, because you'll say, well, the fasting person has, you know, a killer bikini body and is totally, you know, mentally free and has no, and no one can step on him or her because she's an indomitable spirit. But that's not actually the reality. The reality is they don't have an indomitable spirit. They don't have a perfect body. They don't have a totally clear mind, because they're only in that state because they're fasting. Do you see? So the move is to, yes, consider the fact that your body will benefit from a fast here and there, and use it in an effective way to detoxify the body of things that are sharing real estate in your body that don't belong there. But then you have got to make space in your body for the things that are not taking undue real estate. They're being digested. You know, whether they're food items or juices or thoughts or experiences, there's got to be space in your system to digest experience and to digest food and substance. Now, do we take too much food in our society? Is it too much of the wrong stuff? Yes, 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 and yes. But is there an eating you that is perfectly calibrated? Is there an eating you that it can handle interruptions and discombobulating circumstances and deal with interfacing with people who carry a charge for you? If you can be calibrated in that, then you have what's called equanimity, which it basically means that you can be okay in an uncomfortable situation, that you can manage it. And that you're not just managing it, you're breathing, you're in balance in an uncomfortable situation. And that's what yoga is. That's what yoga's for. So with that in mind, this idea of taking on a 90-day fast or a juice feast or whatever you want to call it, or I love myself so much I'm going to not eat for a really long period of time, I'm not sure that comes from so much self-love as it comes from a lot of determination comes to mind, judgment comes to mind, challenge, self-challenge, and those can all be useful things. Those are not all negative. You know, I like to think of discernment rather than judgment, but these are all things that can be used to improve ourselves, to challenge us, to make us fitter, stronger, more able to deal with things because we've overcome them. And they're hard things to overcome. To not eat for a few days is a really hard thing to do. And if you can do that, and you challenge yourself to that, and you accomplish it, you've accomplished something that most people can't do. And that's cool. But don't use that in a dysfunctional way. And to juice fast for 90 days as a self-love thing, I'm not sure that's what I would call it. I would if I were doing that, I would think of it kind of like a triathlon. Like I was challenging my body. I was challenging myself. I was seeing where my mind would go. I was seeing what would happen in me with, you know, just pure life force flowing through me. But I wouldn't let that become a dysfunctional event in my life. And I'm not saying that it is or isn't for this individual who's written it in. I'm just saying for everyone listening to come to an honest conclusion there. And if it is about truly about love, it is truly about a healthy challenge, then by all means, you got to do it. But if it's not, then think about it again. I know I promised I wouldn't spend too much time on one question, and here I go. But
the biggie, because one comes up a lot.
Yeah, it is, and it is the ego that doing its thing. And then one of the things we're really trying to do here is to get out of the matrix, the artificial matrix. And if it's about physique, this is the thing that most people who most people are in the Western civilization, and of course Western civilization is taking over everybody's way of thinking now, everywhere. But the thing that really holds them into the matrix is image. Is body image, is self image, is image of a power, or you know all these things that you know we buy into. So if it's about image, I challenge you, even if you want to do your fast and do your thing, which is cool because it's part of the lifestyle, you can do it. Ask yourself, is this another way that I'm seeing where I'm still deeply embedded in this matrix, where I haven't gotten out of it, where I'm still participating in the lie? And if I'm participating in the lie, then I'm promoting the lie. And so if I'm looking at myself and being self-loathing and self-deprecating, and I'm not good enough unless I'm fasting, and oh my God, I ate something, so you know I'm not worth loving myself, then that's about the matrix, and you are still so much in its grasp. And again, that's not a judgment. It's just we have to identify where we're in the grasp of it. And fasting can create a great illusion that we are out of it, that we're superior, that we are no longer lowly humans in a wretched human experience. But then you get back into the stages of eating, and that becomes a part of you. And so who do you become then? And the other thing, just the last thing I'll mention about this is it's really, I mean, I know I said it was hard to fast earlier. It is hard to fast. But there's one thing that's harder than fasting, and that's systematic, appropriate eating. And a lot of people who, often people who are extremists can be attracted to this kind of a lifestyle. Not so much now because it's becoming much more, more and more people in the mainstream are becoming aware of it. But people can find it very easy not to eat at all, and they can find it easy to overeat. But to stay in a perfect, and to know yourself and be so in sync with your body and so in sync with the universe and so at peace with everything, that you don't overeat and that you just eat the appropriate amount, is what we really want to have happen. And in fact, if you were doing that, you would actually be doing something that's even better than fasting for your body. Because often when we fast, we take in a lot of liquid. I know when I fast, I can do a ton of juice in a day. And not so much during the daylight hours, but once it gets a little later in the afternoon and in the evening, you can really pound those juices down. And that's a lot on the liver. Now, granted, you start your physicality, your mind and heart really start to open rapidly in the first couple of days because, you know, you're not digesting. There's nothing in the center. But it's still something for the body to process in its own way because it's a lot of liquid. If, by contrast, you were having a small salad and I don't know, a couple bananas and just having very little food, but some food, that would actually be as easy, if not easier, on your system. So it's not about absolute abstinence to heal the body as much as it is about, the whole reason for the we juice fast is to stop the burden, because most people can't just eat a little bit. You see, they have to eat a lot. So they have to stop eating entirely in order to get anywhere. So I challenge everyone to get so in sync with life that it becomes a normal event for you to eat appropriately. And that's, in some ways, a much bigger challenge and feat than fasting. Did I even answer the question?
That's true. Yes, and you know, it's funny. It's like most of the call, just as on before, was about building consistency every day with mm-hmm. your diet. That is the best thing that you can do. It's mm-hmm. just the peace and the calmness that comes with that and the long-term healing, and it's just, that's where it's at. So I hope that that inspires a lot of people that are tempted to just use the juice fasting as a crutch, because it doesn't work. It never works that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it's also, there can be so much, we talk about self-love, well, you know, then pick the food that you want to eat, that you know is good for you, and don't let people make you feel bad about it. Don't make them, you know, ridicule you for the way you eat, or, you know, all these things that come up, like, it's almost easier for someone to say, well, I'm just fasting or juice fasting, than, you know, I'm eating raw organic foods. You know, it's, which is bizarre, because, you know, people say, well, it's too hard to explain why they're, you know, why they don't eat protein, you know, or why they don't eat animal flesh and where they get their protein. That's almost a harder discussion for people to have than I'm juice fasting. Because in our culture, it's okay not to eat, and it's okay to extreme diet, but it's not okay to, you know, to live a pure life. So take on the principles of pure life, and that will feel very self-loving, and it can be as, you know, ornate as you want to make it, with, you know, raw strawberry cheesecake, or it can be as simple as a baked sweet potato and steamed broccoli. But let it be something honest, where the amount is honest and the food is honest and pure, and see how that makes you feel about yourself, and see how that raises the bar on your self-love. And trust me, when the body has less to deal with like that, it can really get to the yeast and the bacteria in, you know, in a way that like no other. So all that self-healing can begin to take place. The internal healing will take place as you we often call it systematic under-eating, because it sounds it can be so much less than what you're typically eating, even though it's not actually eating less than the human organism needs. You know, I'm not saying this is an easy thing. I'm saying this is the hardest thing. I hope everyone appreciates
right.
that, too. Yeah. And in terms of yeast, just because this came up in a few different places, I want to address a few options that people have that I've rather recently come into, it's kind of come into my sphere of knowledge, and I've been researching it and working on myself. I never recommend anything to others that I don't first do to myself for a decent period of time. And I have to say, I've been very excited about this specific kind of family of healing toys. And they were created by someone called Bob Beck, Dr. Bob Beck, who's a physicist. And what they're designed to do is kill all pathogens in the body, and including yeast and bacteria, and, you know, fungus, of course, is part of yeast, and, you know, really all pathogens, and supposedly all viruses as well. And it's called the Beck Protocol. It's a few different items that come together as part of the protocol. One is ozonated water. The other is blood electrification, which sounds much scarier than it really is. I'll explain it in a second. And the other is the use of colloidal silver, and using the three of them in concert together to ensure that all pathogens, viruses, and fungus are killed, and yet nothing that is life-generating is killed. So it's like, wow, this is amazing, right? I mean, why isn't this in the mainstream? Well, there's a long story behind why it's on the mainstream, but of course it all comes down to dollars and cents and companies that that wouldn't be very happy if it got into the mainstream. But anyway, so the idea is that the ozonated water and the blood electrification and the colloidal silver are able to do this, in effect, killing off the things that, you know, those of us in our community are so concerned with, especially the yeast. And it's, you know, they're not allowed to say anything officially, the company that manufactures the products now, because Dr. Beck has passed on, but the best company I found that manufactures his products is called Soda Instruments, S-O-T-A, Soda Instruments, and that's where I ordered my products from. And they can't make claims because, you know, how it is in this alternative health community, you're really not allowed to make claims, but Dr. Beck had proven that it killed everything from HIV to herpes and the things that, you know, that people think that they're doomed to forever. So if that's on your radar, something to think about. And basically, it's the blood electrification, which...
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say,
go ahead.
How would that compare to doing the hydrogen peroxide IV?
Great question. So hydrogen peroxide and ozone are both part of oxygen therapy. They're part of like the family of oxygen therapy, like hyperbaric chamber is as well, and you know, and breathing ozone, and so using these different things are all the same family, but they work on the body a little bit differently. So hydrogen peroxide also theoretically would do all the same things that the Beck protocol would do in terms of killing off the pathogens and viruses and bacteria in the body, but getting intravenous hydrogen peroxide, I learned, is just not that. Not that easy to do. You have to go to a doctor and pay a lot of money to do it. And in my case, because my veins weren't that willing, it wasn't very pleasant, and I couldn't do it long term because I only had one vein that wanted to give it up. And if you overtap the same vein, you get this vascular sclerosis. So it's a bit of a problem. In this case, there's no going into the blood at all. The blood electrification is literally this little. It's like a cuff that you wear on your wrist. And you just, there are these two little electrodes, and you just place them literally on your pulse points, on the thumb and pinky pulse point, and they just stick there with Velcro as you turn up this little dial, and these microcurrents of electricity are sent toward into these little nodes that are against your pulse points, and it's super superficial. It goes on just on top of the skin. And so you wear it for, you know, you work up from 20 minutes to 2 hours just wearing it where you can be going about your day, doing whatever you're doing. You know, the only thing I usually wear it when I'm, you know, typing or doing something that doesn't require me, like carrying the baby or something. But otherwise, you just wear it. And it's awesome. And you just it takes about 2 hours for the blood to fully circulate through the system. So that's why they recommend working up to 2 hours. You don't need to wear it for 2 hours, all the time. It's just just because of the 2-hour cycle of the blood. But basically, it's the blood is running through these pulse points, and these pulse points are being getting this microcurrent electricity, which is zapping things that don't belong there. And then drinking the ozonated water. Ozone is known, you know, like hydrogen peroxide to kill all the pathogens. And then the colloidal silver, which is also known to do that, which is, you know, it's been around forever. In fact, I think I mentioned in the last call that colloidal silver was used before there was antibiotics, and that was the thing that was used. So it's kind of just a confluence of a few different, or working in concert with these three things. And I know people have been using it with fantastic results. So it's just another way to attack the yeast issue, to attack and tackle and make it over and out. And I will say I had my blood looked at recently, and there's definitely no concern about yeast in my blood. So whatever I've been doing, living in this toxic city and, you know, crazy lifestyle, all of that together. I know I had yeast conditions prior to doing all this yeast attentive approach, so it's gone. It's not an issue, and I think all of these, everything that I talk about in Detox Women, everything we talk about in this community, has been effective at doing that. And I think this is another tool in the toolbox.
Excellent. I'm sure that's really helpful for people. I see that someone had probably a question related to what we're talking about, so I'm just going to go over and give Sam the opportunity to raise your question. Sam, are you there?
Hello? Yeah.
Hi there.
I actually have a question that does not relate at all, so I will wait my turn.
Well, that's okay, because I think we've kind of fit. Unless there's someone else calling in with a question relating, I think we're moving on to the next question, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you. I've observed that sometimes after intense therapeutic sessions like colonics, massages, or acupuncture, that I get intense food cravings for food that I moved away from for some time now, like pastries or cheeseburgers, like things I haven't had for years. And I know that this is just waste that's being awakened and trying to move out of the body, but the feelings from the cravings are just so real at the time. And my question is what specific tools I can use when in the middle of an intense craving. I found that like taking baths and doing breath work is very helpful, but I just wanted to expand my tool belt, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. You know, I find that when I do my colonics, and at a certain point, I'll be like, I'll suddenly have an experience of remembering a particular food, and I'll be like, what am I tasting? Like, what is this? And I'll be like, oh, my gosh, those are the olives I had last. Oh, how weird. Maybe they're moving right now, you know? And so There's definitely a connection between what's moving through your system and out and what you're mentally remembering. It's totally connected. So you're not mad there, and you're not it's real. So I would say to realize it's not actually a craving, it's just a mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can accept it as that, like, wow, that's leaving, that's up and out, and boy, I do recall liking the flavor of that thing. I can see why I had it before, because it was yummy. You know, then you think, well, either how can I make that the, you know, detox-friendly way, or what else do I love that will make me forget that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Joanna, do you want to chime in there?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't know that I have anything new to share other than what Sam's already doing, but in going along with you, what you were saying, it is this desire to just gain control, the mind-body connection piece is just really helpful, and to seeing it for what it is, and to just breaking free from that. It happens over time, and you'll break free from it and use all the tools that you have right now that help you do that. And I don't know, I'm a big fan of yoga and the baths and walks outside and just kind of doing the nourishing things that feel really good that have nothing to do with consumption.
Yeah, can we ask, can we take it on this as like sort of a trial and see what is this, and we can see if we can identify exactly how to deal with this particular situation, and if you want to share that. And the other thing I would just add too is there's nothing that works better for me than turning myself upside down for a little while. I mean, I know it sounds totally bizarre, but laying on the body slam board, like it just fixes everything. I see the world differently, literally and figuratively. So just add that to your arsenal if you're not doing it already. But what is it, if you want to share, that you're having cravings for?
It was just yesterday. I haven't had meat in a long, long time, and yesterday I had like a really intense colonic, and that evening, I was just like, all I want is a cheeseburger right now. This is the only thing that sounds good to me. And I was just like, what is going on? And it was fine. But I was just like, it just like started me thinking of, okay, the other, like last year I had, I was doing like really well, like detoxing. And I got acupuncture, and I just remember later that day just feeling so affected by it. And then like the next day I remember having like really intense craving. So I'm just kind of piecing together that having this really intense, these therapeutic sessions, I'm going to call them, they're I just like how at the time I can deal with them. Mm-hmm. When looking back, they're like, oh, it was just a craving, or, oh, it was just whatever. But in the moment, it's just so real.
And it's almost like, I mean, you're having a memory. You're having like a deep memory of who you were when you had the, when you used to eat the burgers, and like there's, it's, it could be a bit of a nostalgia in a lot of ways, which is also almost like a hall of mirrors, you know? So one of the most dangerous things is self-indulgence, in the sense that when we've been culturally programmed to have this idea that we need to always be, how do I put this, like nurturing ourselves but in the wrong way, like feeling sorry for ourselves and meeting these so-called needs, and it's almost like the dysfunctional mother. If we can sort of identify when we're doing that, when we become too self-indulgent, Almeen talks a lot about the Toltec warrior, and the Toltec warrior, that's their one thing they constantly guard against is being overly self-reflective. I'm not saying don't reflect and don't be thoughtful and pensive, but to be overly self-reflective means to be looking in the mirror of yourself too much and saying, what's going on in me? What am I like? On the one hand, you know, we do these recapitulation exercises and we want to see what's at the bottom of the programs. On the other hand, there's the swinging way too far on the pendulum in that, which is gets you into a dysfunctional kind of overly, not to say you in particular, but one, into a this kind of spiral into the rabbit hole of their own ego. And if we can if we can catch ourselves doing that, and that can come up in a lot of ways. It can be sneaky. It can come up like what you're saying with the kind of and the craving, and you're interpreting. You know, one could interpret that craving as, you know, well, I should be having this, and my culture tells me I should have what I'm craving. And if I don't have what I'm craving, then I'm going to wind up, you know, binging on what I didn't satisfy in my craving. And these are all like, you know, we want to say, well, who told me that, and where did that come from, and why did I accept that concept? And that's how you go as the slayer, and you prevent this the quicksand of self-reflection. It's very hard sometimes when you get started with this. It's very hard to separate truth from fiction because the fiction can seem like truth because if it's a program, if it's part of your makeup, as part of the way you were trained to think, then we accept it as truth. But it could very much just be the hall of mirrors. So what I would say is, in those moments, like I said before, see if you can make a healthier version, or like maybe there's something you can do that can pull out. Maybe you could even just put ketchup on steamed vegetables or something like that, organic ketchup on steamed vegetables or something maybe in that can you can glean. It may not be the meat taste, but something close to it. But also just see where what other strings it's pulling on in you, and ask yourself, is this a life-generating choice? And am I now doing the life-generating thing? So right now, here you are doing the life-generating thing. This so-called craving wants to pull you back into a life-deteriorating thing. So that's also how you'll know what messages are telling you the truth and which are lying to you, which are devious and which are honest.
It's really interesting that you brought up like this idea of like nostalgia, because I think that really, really applies here for me personally, because I kind of feel like I'm in this like interesting transition point where I can either go, like I'm having a lot of these thoughts of like, oh, remember the good old days, or remember how easy it used to be, easy in quotations, however you want to consider easy to be. But I never thought of like whatever these cravings are, these feelings are, to be connected to that. But I really think that's what it is now that you bring it up.
Yeah, there's an experience that goes with it.
So much.
Yeah. No, it's a pleasure. And hopefully, I think it's something that comes up for a lot of people, so hopefully everyone got something out of that.
Yeah, and
I hope so, too.
The act of sharing this and to just stating it, get it, that takes some of the power away. You've let it out, you know? It's very freeing, I think, to just share what some of the challenges are that come up, because then it just has less power over you. So I think that was helpful for you and helpful for everybody to hear that.
Well, thank you guys so much. So much.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you.
Right. I'm not seeing anyone with a question right now, so I'm going to go back to our list. But if anyone does have a question, you can press 1 and I'll see it. Okay, let's talk about kidney stones. How about that one? There's a mishmash of questions here. I'm trying to group them, but it's hard to do. Anyway, so someone had asked, I have kidney stones and I've been prohibited beets, sweet potato, chocolate, and a very long list of things that were helping me stay on the detox track with their flavors and textures. Any thoughts on how kidney stones are formed and if eliminating these foods, coming from Western thought, are really necessary? It just doesn't logically make sense to me, and it's making my diet boring. I think my issue was mostly dehydration.
Mm-hmm. Does she? Do we know anything about how she was eating before, or not?
No, this is all the context that I have.
Okay. So basically, it's the reason I asked is because by the time you have kidney stones, that's history, and to think that something like beets and sweet potatoes are going to get in the way. I'm assuming that her doctor recommended that she avoid those things. Is that the case, or do we know?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Okay, so So if she's come from a history of eating normally, like quote normally, and then there were kidney stones, and she, you know, started to look at this lifestyle as something she was attracted to, then she's going to cleanse the issue that caused the kidney stones. The beets and the sweet potatoes are not going to get in the way. And as she says, I mean, it's, you know, the main cause of kidney stones is lack of water. So if she's having a dehydrated diet, you know, for who knows how many years, you know, made up of dehydrated food, and suddenly she's eating water-containing foods, then, you know, the kidneys are going to heal. Everything's going to rebalance in that area.
Yeah. All right. Very good.
Yeah, and make sure, just as a whole lifestyle can be dehydrating, including all the things they're in. And, you know, I do want to at some point, maybe not right now, but later in the call, talk about the things that we don't even realize that are dehydrating the body. But let's go on and we'll get back to that.
Okay. All right. This came up actually in a recent email, and I think it's an interesting question. And this person asked, I was wondering if you could address the subject of money in the next conference call, money in regards to cleansing, but also spirituality and how it fits into the interconnected web of life versus the artificial matrix.
I love that question. I feel, and you know, we all need to start realizing that we can intuit so much when we get out of the artificial matrix. So we can, I think one of the reasons that telepathy was possible in the Aborigines, you know, up until recently, had telepathy and communicated that way, was because they all had a common understanding, and they appreciated that life lived in the silent mind was the productive life. And so we live in the antithesis of the silent mind, so we have to use words and communication and everything. I know it sounds like I'm getting off track for a second, but what I want to get at is that there's, when we're all after the same good and we're all in the interconnected network, interconnected web of life, then, and we all have a common goal, which is just to generate life, to conduct life, which is love, which is connection, which is growth, which is beauty, all these things, then we don't need to use words in the same way. Words become almost noisy, right? So in the same way, and when you get into that, you start to intuit things, and that's how you can really get your best guidance, and you get out of the programmed mind and all that stuff. And then this is where we all can wind up, which is really exciting. What will happen as what I'm intuiting with this is that we're at a point right now where money has taken on such a negative energy because it's dehumanized people. It's basically eradicated the humanity. So as we start to move toward honoring humanity, honoring life at large, but let's just say we stick with humanity for a while, that will start to change. And then, and so it's not money, it's not trade that's innately bad. It's that it's become so dehumanizing, the way it's been used, the way it's been accepted. And, you know, so there's those who are so attracted to power that have warped it in this way, who have used humans as resources. This term human resources alone, I mean, how did that ever make it into a common household vocabulary? It's such a sickening concept. So as long as it's connected to human resources and Earth's resources being something that's profit-generated, it will continue to impact mankind and life negatively at large. But that's where the crossroads is happening. So as we start to value human life and value interconnectedness and move into the interconnected network and get out of the matrix, loosen its hold on us, dissolve it completely, that will change. But so there's this juncture right now that feels kind of weird, because there's this group of us that are all like there and getting there. And then there's, but we're looking at the rest of everything, seeing that this is really bad, this is really wonky. But we have to trust that, and it's happening. Like, we have to every day notice the awakening, see what's happening, hold the vision. And those of us who are supporting the living network of life will start to use finances differently. Our exchanges together will be more life generating. We'll actually breathe a new energy into the monetary system. And we'll see that in our own connections, and we'll stop engaging with those who aren't operating in that. So whether it's not buying the food or the clothes or the real estate or the, you know, all the things that are coming out of the matrix, we're just empowering that. We're not giving our energy to it anymore. Instead, we're interfacing financially with companies and people and services that are life generating. We start to move that. We start to literally shift that network of monetary exchange. So it is happening. And I would say, if you're feeling like you want to feel that more, then get more connected with the people who are doing the life generating thing. And if you're feeling stressed financially, notice the places that you're still engaging in the artificial matrix companies, people, services. And that should loosen up a lot right there for you. Joanna, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love Marianne Williamson's book, The Law of Divine Compensation. Have you read that one?
No, but I love her. She's great.
Yeah, so I read that one recently, and it was really helpful on this topic. And I'm just reiterating what you said. It's, you know, it all begins with your exchange and your use and your energy behind it, and that can really, you know, transform your experience with money and your relationship with money and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also just understanding. I'm sorry, Jenna.
Sorry.
I just want to underscore that, like, there's to people really need to also understand that right now the way money is working is it's also all an illusion, because there are these, you know, and this may offend a lot of people, but they're just numbers on a screen. Like, people who've got their money in banks, and, you know, it's all just numbers on a screen. It's not real. It's all been, you know, there's all this debt exchange. I'm not a banker, and this is not my forte, but what I do know is that, you know, there's basically, for every dollar you think you have, you have like negative $100, because it's being loaned out to 100 different places, and all those people have debt too. And it's just, it's really just kind of, you know, whether it's going to crash down tomorrow or next year or in 10 years, it's a lie that is, you know, it's really not upheld by anything except people's belief that they've actually have something real in a bank account. I recommend that everybody find a higher form of currency. Think about what your true currency is. What actually means something to you? What gives you joy and health and raison d'être? And it probably isn't numbers on a screen.
Ooh, some sirens in New York.
Yeah.
In
the background. just for emphasis, made sure they came down the street.
Bring in the soundtrack. That's amazing. It looks like
in case you forget where I'm sitting. Sorry, go ahead, Jenna.
No, it looks like people are wanting to chime in. I don't know if it's on this topic or what, but I'm going to hand it over to Lillian to see if she'd like to share with us.
Hi, Joanna. Hey,
Lillian,
are you there? Read my mind.
Ah, very cool.
I was just going to mention the book by Marianne Williamson. It's amazing.
Oh, good, good.
Good. Let's tell everyone what that is. Yeah, it's the Law of
it's
Compensation.
It's the Law of Divine Compensation.
Great. The Law of Divine Compensation by Marianne Williamson. Wonderful. Great. Lillian, thanks for calling in. What do you have a question for us?
Nope, that was it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and then one other. Maria, hey, how are you doing? Maria?
Hi, Maria. Are you out there?
Maybe that was an accident.
Okay.
All right. Anyone else wanted to chime in on the conversation that we were just having? Okay, Bruna.
Hello?
Bruna.
Hi,
there?
Bruna.
Hey.
Hello? Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi.
A different kind of question. Very different. I've been in and out of the conversation, and hopefully this wasn't covered yet. But I wanted to know, what does stress cause in the body? Like, what happens when we're stressed out?
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. You know, okay, that's such a great question. It affects every single system and cell in the body. So we can say, you know, that the sort of medical knee-jerk response would be, it affects the adrenal gland and cortisol starts to, you know, pump through the body, and they'll tell you all about how cortisol will form belly fat and all that. What I would say is it creates contraction, and that's really what we want to avoid. We want expansion. I mean, we talk about contraction. People like to get, they get into this lifestyle maybe because they want to get a little tinier, and so the cells will start, it's a whole different kind of contraction I'm talking about. The kind of contraction I'm talking about with you right now is that the body goes into self-protective, inward ego, self-focused mode, which is just utter contraction. So the tissues contract, the bone, the skeletal system starts to contract, and that's, that getting shrunken as you get older kind of thing is a great indication of that. It's like the manifestation of all that contraction. We want to live lives of expansion. So the most important thing to keep in mind is if you're living in chronic stress, then your body's constantly, yes, outputting the adrenaline and the cortisol, and you've got this, this whole endocrine nightmare happening, and you have a bowel that's contracting. But really, what you have happening is, is this state of contraction equals calcification equals the light deterioration cycle. So that's why we don't like it. We like it when we're, in the wild and we have functional protection around. That's what stress can be. Mm-hmm. Right, the hyenas. But the opposite of that is dysfunctional chaos and contraction, and that's what we don't want. And just think about if we didn't live lives of stress, if we didn't fear that we were going to be rejected by the tribe or that we weren't worth loving or that there wasn't enough for us, how would we be living? We would be living in constant expansion. We would be just like passing the light along. We'd be conducting love and light. And that's how, that's what life could be on this planet.
Yes.
Sorry you asked.
It makes total sense because it's my constant wheel or snowball, right? I get stressed, I contract, I get constipated, and I get angrier, and then I sleep less, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I've just been finding, I don't know, it's spring, I don't know, so many things happening right now that I am on this roller coaster daily. Mm-hmm. And I have, you know, I can see like all the beauty, you know, right in front of me, and I can work with that. But something happens that triggers me. I go into this crazy contraction and constipation everywhere, right? Mind, everything. And I'm like not finding a way, a consistent way out. And it's just like a depleting my energy to be happy and sad, be happy and hurt, be happy and angry, you know? And then I have little moments of despair. Like, am I going to be like this for the rest of my life? How do I get out of that? Like, you know, like that's my question to me.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. I mean, look, I totally hear you. I have got the very, very hectic household with three children, and because I'm still colluding in a life that is, you know, like at large, living in a city alone is a whole lot of nonsense. So basically, we have two choices when we're faced with something like this. One is to change the situation, and the other is to change your attitude about the situation. So instead of, for example, instead of having the same reaction where it just stresses you out, you allow it. You allow the chaos. You embrace it. You know, just open yourself to it. And personally, I find that harder to do than changing the circumstances, mostly because the connection we have with the experience is so deeply embedded in us that we're so ready to reject it. So, you know, if I go into my kid's bedroom and they've gone off to school and they didn't make their bed and my son left his lunch in the refrigerator and, you know, and I see their homework laying on the table, they didn't take it with them, and you just want to pull your hair out. You're like, didn't we go over all this already? Why am I here? Why am I doing this? Or I can, you know, I can acknowledge the fact that they didn't do all this, and but, you know, how am I actually going to deal with that? Am I going to allow it and just be like, okay, this is life, these are kids, or am I going to get really angry? Well, yeah. I spent a lot of time getting angry over it, and I realized that wasn't serving me very well. And so I had to find another way around it, which is to allow chaos, which is a very hard thing for people who are not so good with chaos and with things going wrong, because you think that it reflects poorly on you, or your, you know, whatever your situation is. There's this, it's just not the easy thing to deal with, right? So that those are really the two choices. Now, the ultimate choice is that it's not a life generating environment, and so things have to change. And then you can start to think about, this is where you can start to dream the functional life into being. You start thinking about, well, you know, what would be functional? What would be a beautiful life? What do I believe in? What would be, you know, what would be different? What would be better? And unless you can envision it, you can't have it. So you have to start with the vision of what it is. And then once you have that, it'll start to come to pass, especially if everything in you harmonizes with that vision. So that's the idea of creating your own reality. You actually become the energy field that you want to see manifest in your life, and then things literally change shape around you to fit that.
You know, I have to dwell in the allowing chaos, because the other part, I have it down. You know, I really am living my dream in multiple levels, and that's what hurts inside, because I am living my dreams. And I am in a beautiful place, and mm-hmm. and I'm still angry. You know,
well, this is a great lesson. This is a great lesson to everyone who thinks that when they move, things will be different,
exactly.
Or you know, things change, right? Or like a new husband, different job, different place to live. When I have this, everything will work. Exactly. So let's how can you? If you want, just like imagine for a second that you're in this stressful situation. Kind of go into a place where you can remember, and everybody can do this while they're listening. Go into that place where you feel frazzled, and see if you can just close your eyes and put yourself there. See what's happening. The things are the distinct things that are affecting you and upsetting you. and see if you can feel it somewhere in your body, first of all. Is it in your throat? Is it in your heart chakra? Is it down in your power center? The two places that usually come up most are the power center and the throat chakra. And usually if the power center is feeling all choked up, so to speak, or tightened or contracted, the palms will also be a little bit sweaty. And that's part of the flight, stress, adrenaline reaction. So, and this goes back to the whole, like, what happens when the body is under stress. And see if you can just feel that for a minute. And see if you can go above that, go in your body, you know, kind of get, find, take your spirit and just go above yourself for a moment and look down on the situation and see if you can, eliminate a lot of the stress just by getting a bigger perspective on it, just by not being so connected with it, so that it it owns you. It shouldn't be like you're plugged into it. And it, you know, you see people who walk their dogs, and you see dogs that walk their owner. You don't want your experiences to be the dog walking the owner. You always want to be walking your dog. So see if this is pulling you in and you're losing your power, and that's probably what's upsetting you the most, is that you know what it's like now to be in balance, because it sounds like it's like a roller coaster, like I think you said a roller coaster, which leads me to believe that there are periods in your day that you're in your center and there are these periods when you're not. And because you know what it's like to be in your center, you're even more angry when you're pulled out of your center, because you're so aware of how it disempowers you and how you're suddenly having your dog walking you. So if you can start to identify when those things happen and you can get back into the driver's seat and you can be there and be present and find your center, hold your center, find that equanimity, that finding comfort in an uncomfortable situation or peace in an uncomfortable situation, then you can start to allow it. You can't allow it if it's taking the reins. You can only allow it if you have the reins on it. And then you just start to realize, to feel what it's like to, I mean, think about, you know, there's a great saying that the tree that's strong enough to bend. So, you know, we become the tree that's strong enough to bend. We become fluid. Fluidity is the big indicator of success in coming back to our wholeness. So if we're able to stay fluid and we're able to be the tree that doesn't break from the wind because it's strong enough to bend, then we also know that it basically means that every encounter we have that may be stressful, we're so fluid that it blows hard against us, but, you know, it blows through us because we're so porous and we're so flexible. And that's kind of idealistic in a way, but you have to have a vision of what you're trying to become, because you can become more and more flexible, just like, you know, when you go into a yoga pose, or, you know, in the beginning you're a little bit tight. So don't expect to, and this is a big mistake. I think some people try this and they don't get it right the first time and they say, oh, this doesn't work. I mean, you know, I'm just as stressed as I was before when this happened, and allowing it just makes me more angry. Well, loosen up a little bit. Don't have to loosen up 100%. Loosen up 10% more than you were loosened before. And then you'll start to realize, okay, I just have to give a little bit more. I have to be a little more flexible. And then with each one, you'll become more confident in your flexibility. Next time it comes along, you'll just, you know, it can almost be like ecstasy running through you, because you'll realize you actually have power over every scenario. And that will feel good. But give it a chance. Work it through a little bit. Let it flow through you. Become more fluid. And the great thing is that fluidity and expansion are like cousins of each other. And remember that fluidity and expansion and flexibility are all part of the our youth regeneration and staying young, energetic, and healthy. So not only are you succeeding in the moment, but you're actually going to prevail over all the things that would undermine our youth, our health, our joy at large, marching forward 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the line.
Oh, that's awesome.
You're breaking up a little bit there.
Yeah. Hello? So just things, you know, that I think just have, just like you said, my problems actually started wedding and a few weeks and the hands and but yeah, this idea of, you know, the allow chaos, the become fluid, allow chaos. I think it has to be sort of my mantra. Become fluid, allow chaos, because that's my thing. It's exactly what you said. I'm growing and I know what I want. I have this vision. So any little thing that comes in that I think will disrupt what I want in this vision, I get like double, triple angry.
Mm-hmm.
I lose it. I'm noticing I'm losing it more. Like, not more often, although more often as well, but more intensely.
Mm-hmm.
Losing it, you know, with my child, or anywhere, you know, by myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then the other interesting thing that came up, you know, it's because, right, I think, oh, I have to control the situation. I have to control my child. And I think what you said, it's like, oh, no, I just have to have power over the situation. Power, not control, because power is different. And I have experienced, being in my power, which is, you know, when I allow chaos, really, I can be there and stand and let it all go crazy around me and I can choose, right? Yeah, choose how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an important thing, too. I was just going to chime in for a second because, Bruna, it sounds like this has been just a pattern. It's habitual, and there's just a way of interpreting situations that you've held on to for a very long time. And it's like, well, how can you just catch that and just, you know, see what's really going on, what's really happening, not the habitual way of responding to situations that's been so ingrained in you.
And also don't get, you know, we're all, as mothers, for many of us, this is the first generation that we're learning this stuff. So our children did agree to be our children, and they knew that they were going to come into to mothers who were in the process of transitioning into something better. And so, you know, on the one hand, it's, you know, you kind of feel like you failed the mission if you fly off the handle or something, because you, of all people, should have it all together because you know what you know. You know, I'll speak for yourself, I'll speak for me, you know. And you know, it's, I'll say personally, if it weren't for having children, I think life would be a breeze. Like, dealing with adults, piece of cake. kids and your kids, specifically one's own children, are completely different to other people's children. Other people's children are a piece of cake. You know, it's the things that, you know, because not only are we responsible for balancing ourselves, we feel this responsibility when we know what we know, and we have this idealized, even though I believe that the idealized vision is something that we're all moving into. It's not idealized in the old context where it doesn't actually mean it's real. It makes us feel like, you know, we're responsible for making sure this happens in our lives and in their lives, and it's very hard to not have the perfection manifested that you know is possible, because you know it's possible once you know it's possible. And kind of like in your body, when you know what your physical perfection is, you can feel, going back to the beginning of the conversation, you can feel like you're not living up to scratch and get very judgmental of yourself because you know what the physical body is capable of, the beauty, the harmony, the perfection. So if it's out of alignment, you think then something's wrong and you're not worth giving yourself an A+ that day for. Same thing with parenting. The allowing of that is really important, but also don't be too hard on yourself if you do let fly and there's an old pattern that comes up. You know, one thing you can always do is you can explain it to your child if you want to, that, like, you know, this came up in you and you were particularly infuriated by it, and it, you know, depending on your child's age and what they're able to make sense of, you know, it can be helpful. But at the same time, you know, you might need to release some energy in a dysfunctional way. And you've got to give yourself a little bit of freedom to do that, knowing that your bigger vision is to not do it in a dysfunctional way, obviously. And then to help your children see that there is a dysfunctional and a functional way of expressing one's anger. And also remembering that anger is a call to protect. So whereas pain is a call for change, the emotion of anger is for protection. So there's something in you and in your as a mother and as a woman, you know, just as a human being, that is asking for you to see that something needs protecting. And you can ask yourself, well, what is that? And maybe it's the innocence of your child. Maybe it's the well-being of your spirit. And then you can ask yourself, well, what is threatening that innocence? What is threatening that well-being? And that will help you find your next steps. But we have to honor anger. Functional anger can always give us our next insights. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. I'll dwell on that.
All right, Bruna. Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I think it's a biggie. These, you know, it's all in the cell. We have the emotions, we have the life experience, we have the exposure to substance. It's everything taking place in that little cell, in that whole organism. And, you know, we can't ignore things that are really happening in us because we want to pretend that, you know, we've reached a place where we're above it. In fact, the exciting thing about life is that we say often there's never an end point. But once we've conquered these things in ourselves and our households, there are going to be, you know, other things that we're going, challenges that we're going to be given or we're going to, you know, be confronted with. And the better a warrior we can become, I mean that as a peaceful warrior we can become, the more we'll be able to bring that to bigger challenges. They're going to be even more satisfying, although, you know, albeit more daunting as well.
Yes, thank you so much for the insights. Actually, just, you know, feeling calmer.
Good. Well, try it out. Try that flexibility exercise out next time something comes up, and think about the next frustration that comes up as a gift to be able to practice on.
Yes. I have been actually changing that dialogue in my mind. Like, this is a little challenge. What do I have to learn here?
Great.
Good way to look at it. Natalia.
Thank you, Bruna. Thank you for the honesty, too. I just like so admire that coming forth and just sharing so openly with everyone. I'm sure so many people can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, Natalia, if you have a couple more minutes, there's one other hand raised. I can take that, or it is after 2 o'clock, so I just wanted to check in with you.
No, I'm happy to keep going if anyone has any questions. Yeah.
All right, perfect. All right, I'm going to go over to Shannon then. Hey, Shannon.
Hi, how are you, ladies?
Hi.
I got in a little bit late, but I know your time is fine. I came in when you were talking about the money, and I was just thinking, you know, my husband has been traveling a ton lately, like a lot. Monday through Thursday he's gone, and then he's international, so we are not together a lot, but... And I found myself just completely just swipe the credit card, and completely lost all sense of, like, any responsibility with money at all. And I was like, what is going on with me? Am I self-medicating? Am I just desperate wife housewife syndrome? Like, I don't know what's going on. And I had to really take a step back and realize what I was doing. And when I heard you talk about it, I was like, yeah, that's a real part of our well-being. Being responsible with our finances, but looking at the bigger picture. And so I was just relating to what you were saying, and that as I've been going through this whole fertility stuff and just really we're talking about very nourishing to myself in the ways that I need to be and not focusing so much on the food. I had to be very honest with myself and realize that it's all the emotional stuff. It's that there's so in becoming a mother, and he talked about feelings of being rejected by the tribe or feeling judged, and I just had to be very honest and realize, okay, yes, I have a lot of fear about what if it does happen, or when it does happen, oh my gosh, and so I could do the diet perfectly, I can be doing colonics, I can be doing everything, but if my visualization of my future family is not in my heart and in my mind, then that's been my hold up, and that's been my biggest thing. And when that sweet lady was talking to you just recently, I was completely connecting with that it's so much of the emotional, mental, and that our brain doesn't distinguish between what it sees in our mind's eye or our real eye. So I've just been having to literally sit down and picture myself with my family while enjoying my process, not trying to be too far for the goal, focus on the goal, enjoy the process, but still make that a part of my reality and really expect it and not be afraid and to let go of that. So that's where I am right now, and I
That's great. Wow, it sounds like you've done a lot of good work there.
That's all. I didn't mean to take so much time.
No, it's great. It's always great to hear from you and to hear how you've been progressing. I mean, it's you've been doing it for a long time and you've had your nose to the grindstone. It's a great testament, and it's a you're a great leader. So.
Well, working on some of the physical stuff, I'm finding that my digestion seems completely non-existent, really. Not eliminating on my own. And it's been a while, and I wasn't quite sure if I was just, the transit time was so slow, or if it's because I've been doing so many colonics and enemas. So I didn't want to read into it too much, but it seems like nothing's going on. And I know people have expressed that before, but this is kind of my turn to feel that way. So not sure if that has anything to do with title coming back, my body just changing, but
Well, there can be seasons, seasons not meaning like three or four months. I mean, there can be periods in one's life, here and there where things, there's ebbs and flows, and that's, I think, what people wind up finding is that it is a little patch where that might occur. But if everything else is feeling good, it'll all, kind of come back again. So if, see what happens, since this is not a common thing for you, see if it's just a period. And,
That's what I come back to. I didn't into it too much, but great. Well, thank you so much. I will let you go. Have a wonderful day, both of you.
You too. Keep it up.
All right. Have a good one.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Shannon.
All right, I'm going to take one more before we
Great.
Say goodbye, because I see that Courtney has her hand raised. Hey, Courtney.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Courtney. Yes, great to hear from you.
So I just have a very quick question. Basically, I got back to the U.S. 2.5 weeks ago, and I was gone for almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. and since coming back, my skin, my face is completely, completely broken out, and not just a few pimples, very severe acne, and it's really embarrassing and horrible, and I didn't leave the house for 2 weeks. I'm doing colonics, I'm, juicing and everything, and I wanted to know why is it bad, or if it's bad, to use an antibiotic cream from a dermatologist. I just want to know, the science, if I really should not do that, because I have been doing it, because it needs, extreme care right now. It's, kind of a mess, my face. So I wanted to know, why would it be bad to use an antibiotic topically, or if it's bad,
and then also anything you can recommend topically.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not surprised though, because you're shifting vibrations. You're shifting frequency, and you were in Singapore, right?
I was in Singapore, yeah.
Yeah, for the full now, I don't know what the I understand that Singapore is pretty clean, right?
They keep it clean, but actually after Singapore, I was in Thailand for 4 months and then India mm-hmm. for 3 months. So.
Wow, wow.
Traveling.
Well, yeah, so you've been exposed to a lot, and your body is, and now here you are back again in like, you know, Chemical Central, and are you back, you're back here in New York City with your parents?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, that's a whole reshift. I mean, even, I remember when I was pregnant with Electra in the first trimester, my face went nuts. And I honestly looked like I had a pizza, like a pepperoni pizza on my face. And it was just bizarre because, you know, before and after, you know, my skin is great. And, you know, when we're shifting frequency, whether it's pregnancy or shifting continents, and you've been on a, you know, the epic tour, your body is part of everything. So it's going to go through something. And you did have skin issues, if I remember correctly, before you got into the lifestyle, right? That was one of the things that you were working on?
I had like a few like breakouts like here and there, but it wasn't like I never would say I had bad skin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It wasn't like a serious issue for me. Maybe here and there, but it wasn't, I don't know.
Right. Well, it's definitely an expression of the shift. And you know, you could use some topical antibiotic treatments, but you know, the chemicals are going to penetrate into the tissue. If you wanted to use it as a bridge, as a little crutch, you know, and everything else you were doing is clean, then give it a try. I mean, there's nothing worse than feeling like you can't walk out of the house because your face is a mess. I mean, you don't want to feel that. But you also don't want to put chemicals anywhere in your body because, you know, they may as well be going, they're going straight into your bloodstream. They're permeating throughout. So what you could do is just find a really great esthetician to, you know, help do the extractions until your face heals. And I can recommend a couple of people to you in the city. And keep your skin really clean and allow yourself to basically sync back up with the vibe here. And as you do that, you know, you'll find that you will rebalance. So I would say if you're going to do the chemical stuff, then, you know, keep it, you know, limit it to a certain amount of time. And then, do what you know to do on the other side of it all. Also, you know, you can even use nascent iodine topically. It's supposed to be great on pimples. Nascent iodine is one of those things that's really not very not very well known and way underused in the health circles. Certainly, it's not even discussed in medical circles. But it was an Edgar Cayce remedy/concept, and basically it's mostly used internally to help with thyroid imbalances. It's not like regular iodine that's used for the thyroid. It's the way it's created, it goes straight into the blood. It doesn't have to be broken down in the digestive tract like regular iodine does, which is why regular iodine doesn't usually do what it's supposed to do. But nascent iodine, nascent iodine, is great both topically and for thyroid imbalances. So that's something we can talk about a little bit more in the next call, but something that everyone can be looking into in the meantime. And if anyone has experiences with it, you know, be sure to let us know too so we can broaden the discussion. But that's something you might try. And, you know, meanwhile, I would highly recommend you go see Monica Waters, who's a remarkable esthetician. She's down she's downtown in not quite to Chinatown, but downtown. And I can set you up with her. And then there's also Amelia, who's a bit closer to you. Although I'm not sure if she's still around, but I would say do all those things in the meantime, and I don't think this is going to be a problem for very long for you.
Okay, and what about that, another call you mentioned that Siberian pine nut oil, do you think I should try that on my face, or it's not recommended?
That would be wonderful too, the cedar nut oil. Mm-hmm. All those things have antibacterial properties, and they're also very healing. So they it's kind of a two for one.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, anything that's going to, you may, I mean, you, tell me when did this start to erupt? Was it just when you hit American soil, or was it prior?
Well, it was, like, when I was in India, I got, my skin got a little bit bad, but it wasn't, like, and I still didn't wear makeup. It wasn't really that bad. Like, I got, like, a few pimples here and there. And then after that, actually, I was in the Caribbean for 2 months visiting my sister, and I was on a cruise ship with her. And it got, like, pretty bad, but still not to the point where, like, I still, it didn't affect me, like, emotionally. And then, like, the second I got to New York, it seemed like overnight it, like, tripled in severity. So, like, it was slowly creeping up, but then, like, when I got here, it was just, like, all of a sudden. More. Like,
so
I can't.
It sounds like it sounds like it could really well be something internally. So doing the topical antibiotic is not going to fix the problem. It's just going to temporarily. It may kill anything on the surface, but if what's what we always want to know with skin eruptions is where is it coming from? Is it because topically things are bacteria laden, or is it because internally bacteria is pushing out through the skin? So if it's the latter, which it sounds like it probably is, and, you know, this is very common. People pick things up in India, on cruise ships, you know, traveling like you have been. I mean, like I said, Singapore, I think, is you're pretty safe, but going to these more exotic locales, and it's pretty exotic too, but, you know, you can pick up little parasites and weird bacterial forms, and if they're showing up on your face and they're indicating something that you want to see inside too. So if you want to take this a little bit further, you could go and see a live blood cell analyst. And again, I can recommend, if you want to just give me a call later on this week, or I suppose the week's almost up, give me a call tomorrow or later today, and I will give you the name of a couple of live blood cell analysts. You can actually have your blood read, and they can, that would, if it were me and you knew that was an option, I would just go have my blood read and see what was going on. Because the face is probably telling you something you need to know more urgently than just, like, how cosmetically beautiful you are. And you are such a beautiful girl. There's no reason for you to be walking around without beautiful skin. So let's fix that.
Okay. So, yeah, I'll do the – that sounds like it would be a good idea. Because I know it must be something that was internal and now it's, you know, showing externally. So, yeah, thank you so much for that advice.
No, glad to have you back, and hope maybe we'll do a detox walk again real soon, and we can.
Yeah, actually, I'm in the park right now. It's really beautiful.
You are. Oh wow, we should be there.
Okay. Thank you. Maybe I'll call you later for the info.
Yeah, definitely do.
Okay, thank you so much,
Courtney.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Well, we are almost at 2:30 now, so I wanted to just give you a chance, Natalia, to just say goodbye to everyone. Thank you guys too for me for sharing and all the great questions. This is a packed call. It was a good one. So thank you guys.
Yeah, no, thank you, Joanna. Thanks for everyone for calling with your questions, and I hope it opened your mind on certain subjects, and it's gotten everyone, you know, thinking about how they can take their next steps. And everyone who's working with you, Joanna, is gonna, you know, just go so far in the next few weeks, and I look forward to connecting with them. We've got two dates, one on the phone and one via video, which is going to be a lot of fun. So thank you, everyone, for your constant just faith in us and sharing the love and feeling this family, which is so beautiful. And anything that we can ever do for you, please let us know. Okay, have a wonderful month, and we will catch up with you next month. Okay, bye.
Bye.